When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Appropriate timing, given Wayne Gretzky will join us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon, that we come off the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Remember Wayne's night and how special that was, that was?
Well, remember, the Hall created rules that no one can do what they did with Wayne, which was Wayne retired in April of 1999, and Wayne was inducted into the Hall of Fame in November of that year. And they passed a bylaw that says everybody has to wait 3 years. I always wondered, will we start to hear when Alex Ovechkin retires that he should go in the Hall of Fame immediately? I wonder.
I would think so.
What if he goes and plays in the KHL?
Well, then he goes in immediately after he's done playing in the KHL.
We're waiting for Jaromir Jagr to finish.
You're playing. Right. And Jagr played again this year, so he's 3 years
away.
4
years, yeah.
So, but there are certain people, Sid, that category of go right in.
Boy, that. But there's nothing wrong with rules, right? Is there? I mean, I know you like breaking rules all the time, but there's nothing wrong with rules. And 3 years is a fair number. It used to be longer than that, but there's also some strange things that builders are allowed to be in while they're still working. I don't understand that one, but that's another story for another day.
There's exceptions to every rule.
Yes, there is. Well, and Wayne was the exception, and then they tried to close that loophole. And you wonder in the future if in fact it will happen. I mean, and to me, the two guys we talked about, Sid and Alex, are the two guys you wonder if they will become the next exceptions. But you still, again, I think it goes back to what if Alex goes back and plays in the KHL for a year
or two? Did you sit in the ceremony
No.
Watch them live, or did you watch downstairs?
Downstairs. Downstairs is so much fun because
in the hall.
Yeah, in the actual hall, and you walk around, you can shake hands, kiss babies, and apparently I'm pretty good at that. So
people pretty excited about the podcast?
I had two people come up to me, and they say they love the 100%ers. So that's we're doing okay. We're doing okay. We're not there yet, but we're doing okay.
Did you line up a couple of interviews?
Do you think I ever stop lining up interviews? Seriously.
So we got Wayne today.
What?
And we've gone back and forth on Wayne and his schedule and our schedule, and it finally lined up. And I think it's perfect timing, coming off Four Nations and everything that happened with Team Canada there and him, and then now going into the Olympic cycle and his experience both as a player and as executive director.
Well, I think the Olympic story to me of all the topics that we will approach Wayne about, I think the Olympic story is the neatest one when you consider in 2002, and you were on the outside of the fence there, weren't you?
Yeah, non-rights holder.
I was right smack in the middle there. I will tell you that one of the key things was to win for Canada to win for the first time in 50 years and Wayne Gretzky to be the architect of it was as exciting as it's ever been for Canadian hockey until 2010 when Stevie Yzerman ran the program, because Wayne actually didn't want to run 2010. I think he would have been offered it, but after doing 02 and doing 06, he had had his fill of it.
I scalped a ticket, $700 to get into that gold medal game in 2002. Because I was a non-rights holder. I walked in, sat down, and the Americans scored. And I thought, what have I done? And it turned out well in the end.
Yeah. Well, that's there are certain moments of one's career that you remember. That Sunday is one I remember. Actually, I will tell you that probably the more impressive event of those games was the women's game on the Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And Danielle Sauvageau was the coach of that team, and she was inducted to the Hall of Fame on Monday night. I remember I was working for NBC at the time, and it was just an electric couple of days between Canada beating USA in women's hockey and then Canada beating USA in men's hockey. Do you remember the two coaches of the men's teams that year in Salt Lake City?
Well, Pat Quinn.
And?
Team USA, Herb Brooks?
Herb Brooks.
Yeah.
Herb Brooks.
Amazing.
And Herb and I had become, we worked together for 4 years and we had threatened to kill each other for 3.5 years. And then by the end of it, we became great friends. And he was always a great person to sit and talk about the game of hockey with. And in so many ways, guys like Pat and Herb, I know there are great coaches in this league, but they don't make them like Pat Quinn and Herb Brooks.
Those two.
Yeah.
How do you say you love Herb Brooks without saying you love Herb Brooks?
Hey, I saw Mike Arruzzioni Monday night.
I'm with Herb Brooks.
I saw Mike Arruzzioni Monday night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, I laughed. Can I tell one quick Arruzzioni?
Yeah.
So I used to produce.
You're only keeping Wayne waiting. That's all.
Listen, he can wait. Okay. I waited a long time for Wayne, a lot in the last 40 years. This is 2 years after they won the gold medal, and I'm producing games in the United States, and I'm checking into the Royal Sonesta Hotel in Boston. And Mike is our color commentator for this game I'm doing. I check in, I walk into my room, I open the door, and who's sitting in a chair in the corner of my hotel room?
They already in your room?
Yes, Mike Arruzzioni. So I said, Mike, because he's living in Boston, but we were supposed to meet, and he didn't want to be in the bar. So I said, Mike, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm Mike Arruzzioni, Olympic hero. I can do anything. So he had gone to the front desk and said, I'm meeting this young guy, John Shannon. Just let me in his room and I'll meet him there. And they gave him a key. So I reminded him of it on Monday night and we howled. So anyway, so that was.
One day, all of us. Any one of us would like to have that kind of pull.
Whoa.
Just one day to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, well.
You know who can do that?
Score a big goal in an Olympic Games and you'll be able to do it.
I know a guy who could do that.
And
he's going to join us.
Oh.
Yeah. Wayne could pull off something like that.
Well, don't make him wait, Darren. Come on, let's go.
The great one coming up on 100% Hockey. Looking forward to this.
NHL TV is now on DAZN. Hockey lives here.
Here we go.
Watch every game from every team. The best players in the world. And the coldest plays on ice. Watch up to 4 games at once for the ultimate NHL experience. Sign up now at DAZN.
99 reasons to listen to 100% Hockey today with John Shannon and Darren Millard. Here's the great one. What's the biggest worry every day that you wake up these days?
My biggest worry?
What's your biggest worry?
I don't know. Right now, I just hope for good health for all my kids and my grandkids. You know, that's the most important thing. I've been fortunate in life that we've all stayed relatively healthy. So that's the biggest worry when I get up.
Mine is that I wake up, Wayne, just for the record. So.
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes too.
So, what do you make of the changing of the guard in this league? Celebrini, Bedard, Carlson.
Well, I was thinking about it this morning, and as I was sitting there, the first thing I said too was, boy, this is kind of a changing of the guard. And then I thought, you know, it's not really changing of the guard because McKinnon, Matthews, Dreisaitl, McDavid, they're still great players and they're relatively young. So maybe it's an addition to the guard. But these kids have really impressed me this year. I haven't seen a whole lot of hockey, as not much as I usually do, because I spent about 3 weeks in the first month of October in Europe doing some things. So I haven't been able to see as many games as I normally do at this time. But I'll tell you what, San Jose is playing unreal, and Celebrini and those young guys are a big part of that. Chicago, Bedard's gone to another level. You know, I talked to him last year, and I said, you know, the reward you get for being the best player in the world at 18 is you get to go to the worst team in the NHL. That's your reward. And you can't put all that pressure on one young guy at 18. And so the organization has done a nice job of building some speed and size around him. Jeff is a really good coach and good for him. Their team is heading in the right direction, and he's a big part of that. And then Anaheim, my goodness, what a hockey club they have out there. And Joel Quenneville and his entire staff, what a job they're doing. And they're exciting to watch. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the old Oilers back in the 80s where you just go. And he's got them playing at a high speed, and they're playing very confidently, and they're a fun team to watch. So, you know, like I said, I think it's an addition to the guard, and it's great for the game.
What did you say to Bedard? Did you give him any advice?
Yeah, I just basically said, look, I was your age at 19 and 20, and one guy can't do it all. You can't put the whole world on you. You know, Gordie Howe taught me this when I was 19. You're going to blink, and all of a sudden you're going to be 29, 30 years old, like Connor is now and McKinnon and those guys. It goes by so fast, because the more you love something, the quicker it goes, right? So sit back and enjoy it. Don't put all the weight on the world. One guy can't change a franchise. Now, he's a huge part and a big reason why the franchise is succeeding. There's no question he has all the pressure on him, but he's handling it extremely well. He was the poster child at 14 in junior hockey, world juniors, now in the NHL. And, you know, I liked what he said the other day. He's going to play the best hockey he can because he wants the Hawks to be successful, and B, he wants to play on Team Canada. Good for him. That's the way he should be thinking, and he's doing that.
So in 2001, in November of 2001, we were all glued to what Wayne Gretzky was going to decide with his Olympic team.
Yeah.
What's Doug Armstrong going through right now and his staff and trying to figure out what's going on with Canada?
Those are great problems, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, you want that fight. You want that people to say, well, so-and-so has to be on the team. And you look at the guys that weren't on this team at the Four Nations, and I'm thinking of Shifley, Wilson, who are playing exceptionally well, both of them, and they're making a case to be on the team. And you have Celebrini and Bedard. And how about the young defenseman on the island, Schaefer? This kid is playing like a seasoned veteran. He's good defensively. He's a great kid off the ice. He's good offensively. He skates like the wind. And he's just been nothing but a positive for National Hockey League and for the Islanders. And so those are tough decisions. And sometimes you don't just take the best player. Sometimes guys got to fit in, right? Because everybody who goes to that team is used to playing on the first two lines. You got to find guys that say, you know what? I'm comfortable. I know my role on the third and fourth line. And so the success that we had when I played, not, you know, obviously Mario was special and guys like that are unique, but you got to have those guys that can, who are used to playing 20 minutes a game, but it looks not accept their role, but accept the responsibility of playing maybe 13 minutes. And so I looked at that team in 87, you got guys like Prop and Hawerchuk, Tockett. Those guys were a vital part of the success of that team. And you have to have guys like that. So you don't just take the 22 best players. Obviously, you want the best you can get. But there's got to be pieces to fit. And that's where Armstrong's done a great job in the past. And Coop is a great coach. And the staff is good. So they're going to have – listen, there's going to be controversies no matter what, right? And that's a good problem to have. Good for them.
Are you one of those guys that believes in lots of centers?
You know, I believed when I picked my team in 02, I believed that you take the best players because the best players can play on the wing. Mario could play on the wing. Iserman can play on the wing. Sackett could play on the wing. So you take the best players, right? And if you say it's a Bedard and say, you know, we're going to play on the wing, I'm sure he's going to say, great, I'm happy to be on the team. So those guys make adjustments. They're good enough that they can make adjustments.
What was the decision that you wrestled with the most in 2002 going down to the wire?
Two things. One was the third goaltender. And so I called Eddie Bell for myself. And I said, Eddie, nobody will know I made this call. Because, you know, when you turn down Team Canada, people get a little bit irate, you know. And I didn't want that on him. And I said, you're not going to play unless two guys get hurt. I said, but nobody will know I made this call. And he said, are you kidding me? I'll be there. I'll sharpen skates. And as soon as he said that, I said, you know what? We're picking the right guys. And then everybody got to pick unanimously. You know, we had about 10 people in their coaching staff, Tambellini, Lanny McDonald, Kevin Lowe, myself. And we kind of said, we got to all agree on these players. And so everybody agreed. And I said, I put my hand up and said, but I'm going to make one decision. I said, Theo Fleury's on the team. And they were like, well, okay. I said, because I hated playing against him. And I knew how big of a big game player he was. He's on the team. So I was like, okay. So it came down to Wade Redden or Ed Jovanovski as the seventh defenseman. And we were sitting there and we were sort of, it was 5-5 basically. And so we said, you know, we were in this conference room in Toronto, I believe. And we had this phone in the middle, and we called Glenn Sather and we said, what would you do? And he said, they're both great young defensemen. Jovanovski might give you a little bit more energy offensively. You guys are good enough defensively. And sure enough, Ed didn't dress in game one because we were like, do we dress 7D? Or so we weren't comfortable with that. And after we laid an egg in game one, Pat put him in game two on. And he didn't play a whole lot, but when he got out there, he gave us that energy, exactly what Sather said. And he was a big part of the success of that team.
So one of the – it's funny because so you had Salt Lake and then you had Milan. Yeah. And the debate now is, do you go young in 2026?
Yeah.
You went with the veteran-laden team in Milan, mm-hmm. and it let's face it, it backfired.
We lost.
Okay.
But, you know, the amazing thing about that team was we played well at the beginning. I think we outshot whoever we lost to 53-12 and lost 1-2 an empty net goal. So it wasn't, and all of a sudden you're sitting there, you're out of the tournament and you're going, well, what just happened? But, you know, one of the big issues of that tournament for me was Niedermeyer got hurt, and Niedermeyer was such a great defenseman, and we desperately missed him. But our guys played hard. They played well. We got beat in one game, and that happens. When you go to the Olympics, anything is possible, right? Anything can happen.
I guess my question really was, how do you balance between going with the young guys versus the veterans? How do you make those decisions in 02, and how do you do it in 06?
Yeah. That's the tough one, and that's what John Cooper and Doug Armstrong, those are the things that they have to look at. And one of the things that I did, Kevin Lowe and I, we would sit with Pat and say, Pat, you're on the bench. If there's 2 minutes left in the game, if you're up a goal or down a goal, are you going to look down the bench and want to put that guy on the ice? And that's kind of how you get down to the last four, five, six guys, right? Is that guy going to make a difference in the last 2 minutes of the game? Now, he might not even get on the ice at that point, but those are things you think of as a coach. Okay, I really trust that guy. We got a one-goal lead. I know that guy's going to be great defensively. He's going to be responsible. He's what I want on my team. And that's kind of how you get down to the last. Age doesn't really come into a factor. It's, I think you take the best players possible. In 98, Bobby Clark said that. He said, you know, if I did it all over again, I would have took some more skill guys. They tried to go to a big sort of defensive Canadian team. And again, we didn't play poorly. We got beat in a shootout, 2-1 in a shootout. So that's the issue with the Olympics. That's why it's so hard to win the gold medal, because anything can happen in any particular game. I remember sitting there in 98 and we were going into the shootout, and I was sitting beside Stevie Eiserman, and we were talking about Hasek. And I remember I turned to him and I said, you know, the biggest problem with Hasek out there is, and he said, what? I said, our best breakaway guy, Joe Sakic, is sitting 8 rows behind him because he was hurt. I said, that's the guy we need in the shootout. And sure enough, we lost by one.
Were you asked to shoot, though, in that thing?
No.
You weren't? Okay.
You know, it was one of those things. It was so well run. It was so amazing. You know, people forget this. When we were going over there, there was a little bit of animosity, and there was some skepticism that the Canadian hockey players, NHL guys making money, would fit in with not Team Canada, the hockey team, but all of Team Canada.
Right.
And as it turned out, the first 5 days, we brought the whole, every team together, figure skaters, speed skaters, curlers. We would go back to the village and sit around and watch the other sports with all the other athletes. So after a few days, it came out of there, wow, these Canadian guys, you know, this is unreal. And for us, it felt like kids when we were going to hockey tournaments, right? And you stay together and we were like, this is unreal. We loved it. And so, and we fit in nicely. And they had everything mapped out to a T. The one thing I guess was overlooked, we didn't know what the overtime rule was at that point. We didn't know if it was sudden death, 20 minutes. We had no idea. And I'm not sure who knew, but we didn't know as players. And then as it got down to the 10 minutes, we could tell the Czechs were just playing for a tie. They were one guy in and four guys back, sometimes five guys back. And then I think we got caught a little off guard. I'm not sure anybody knew that there was a shootout, because the players weren't told till, gosh, right before the five guys were set to shoot. And that's when we actually found out.
Hey, what was it like in that room at Four Nations when you were talking to Canada?
It was unreal. I got to go in before the game and wish the guys good luck. You know, it's a fine line, right? You don't want to bother the players. It's one of the biggest games for a lot of those guys that they've ever played in. It was an emotional game for everyone. So when I went in there, I was like, not tiptoeing around, but I don't want to get in their way, because I know as a player, before the game, you have a routine. So I got there early enough that, you know, the game was at 8:15. I was in the locker room by 5 o'clock. So the guys were pretty relaxed and loose at that time. And I just talked to them and wished them good luck. But then I had a wonderful time. I spent 2.5 hours with John Cooper and his coaching staff in the coach's office, just sitting there and talking hockey stories. And it was unreal. And, you know, it was so exciting to be in there. And then, of course, the game itself was a phenomenal game. And obviously, Canada wins. Everyone's excited.
Do you understand all the flack you took at home?
Yeah, because Canadians are proud. You know, I was saying, somebody said, why didn't you wear a Canadian jersey? And I said, because nobody gave me one. Where is it going to buy a Canadian jersey in Florida? I flew up from Florida. And then I walked out on the ice where the NHL told me to walk out on the ice. As right. Simple as that. So, you know, I understand. Canadians are proud. And, you know, they thought I maybe jumped ship, but that's not true.
No. Actually, the other thing was that they forgot that Mario didn't wear one in Montreal.
Yeah, but Mario's Mario. He can do whatever he wants.
Hold on. That's the pot called the kettle black, Wayne. Wayne, you can do anything you want to.
He was so good. Mario was special. And I always tell people say, who's the best player? I said, let me tell you this. Let me make it really easy for you. The best player I ever played with was Mark Messier. And the best player I ever played against was Mario Lemieux. Now, Gordie Howe is my idol, and to me, he's still the greatest player ever lived. I played against Gordie. Gordie was 50, and he got 20 goals in the National Hockey League. Now, I know the game's different back then, but when you're 50 years old and you can get 20 goals, I don't see anybody else doing that. And then Guy Lafleur, I got to meet Flower in 81 at the Canada Cup, and I was like it was like Yogi Bear and Boo Boo. I wherever he went, I was right behind him. he nicknamed me Curly. So everything Guy Lafleur did, I did. That's how I started going to the rink early, because in 76, I guess, Bobby used to like going to the arena at like 1:30, 2 o'clock. And so Flower was following Bobby. So Flower told me, we're going to the rink at 1:30. And I said, well, the game's not till 7:30. He goes, okay, we'll go at 1:45. I'm like, okay. And he would get in there. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. He'd get fully dressed, skates on, except not tied up. And he would sit there for 5 hours getting ready for the game and get focused. It was incredible to see. And so I didn't go to the games at 1:30. I started going at like 2:30, 2:45. But it was always nice, because once you get in the locker room, you knew nobody could get to you. And so I remember we played game 7 in Toronto that year. And 2:30, my phone rang. Now, when my phone rings, and there wasn't cell phones really back then, I know it's either my mom and dad or my wife, because they know what I'm under. And so when I answered the phone, she goes, listen, I hate to bother you, but Mike Myers called. Can you get him 4 tickets for the game tonight? And I go, okay, yeah, when I get to the rink, I'll figure it out. So I knew a couple of the guys who scalped tickets in front of Maple Leaf Gardens, because I'd been going there since I was 14 or 15 years old. So I knew everybody. So the clubhouse kid who was working in our clubhouse, I said to him, listen, go out there and find Mike, ask him what he'll charge me for 4 tickets on the ice or 4 really good seats. The kid came back and he said, a pair of game-used gloves and 2 game-used hockey sticks, and you got 4 tickets. So I signed the sticks, signed the gloves, sent them out, and I got the 4 tickets. So,
but if memory serves me, Myers wore a Leaf sweater.
Yeah, but he should. He's from Toronto, you know. It was funny because I just saw the John Candy documentary the other day, which was phenomenal to watch. It was really well done. And I remember we got into the we got in the 3rd round, and now everybody's jumping on board. A lot of celebrities, a lot of people were like, oh, we got to go to a Kings game. So I remember I said to Barry Melrose, I said, Barry, listen, because we had our own plane. I said, everybody's going to want to get on this plane. I said, don't let anybody on. There's only 2 people allowed in this plane, because they've been with us and they've been with the Kings forever, John Candy and Alan Thicke. Mm-hmm. And so they traveled with us to all the games. And I said, you know how loved John Candy is? He's the only guy that could cheer for LA and still be the most loved guy in Toronto. That's how nice John Candy was. So, you know, it was interesting, and, you know, it was fun to be around him.
Yogi, Boo Boo, and I'll call John Shannon Ranger Smith. We'll continue with Wayne Gretzky on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Continuing our conversation with Wayne, Connor went through an up and down the other night, losing 9-1. I loved his reaction at practice the next day. It wasn't barking at teams, but there was some stern conversation. And then a bounce back win last night. Do you see a lot of yourself in what Connor does in those situations?
I don't know. I was pretty quiet as a captain. Even like, I was probably more vocal when we were winning. I was one of those guys. It's kind of like when I was a kid, if I had a really bad game, my dad wouldn't say much. And if I had a really good game, I'd get in the car and I think, gosh, I had a good game. My dad would go, you know, you weren't that good tonight. That's how it goes, huh? So I was more that way. I think Mark was more the guy, like Mark took every loss to heart, like unimaginable. He was really an emotional leader. He was an emotional hockey player. He's an emotional person. So I think he's more like Mark than it was sort of the way I was a captain. But listen, I was thinking about this you know, we lost in the finals that year to the Islanders, and they were a better team than we were. We deserved to lose, and they had Bossy and Trache and Bourne, Potvin, Smith. They were a good hockey club. They'd won, you know, 16 series in a row to win that fourth cup, which is unheard of. Then they won three more, and we got them again in the finals. And we knew that at that point in time, they were physically probably beat up a little bit, mentally tired. And so we got them at the right time. But I remember thinking when we lost that four straight that year, it was such a long year for us because all we kept thinking about, even, and we played 14 exhibition games in those days. So I played 14 exhibition games and 80 league games and then all the playoff games. And so finally you get through the exhibition and then you get through the regular season and you're sitting there, okay, game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is what we played all year for, to get back to the final. So when we got back to the final, it was so overwhelming for us. We're like, oh my God, this is great. Because it was so devastating to lose in the final. And I was thinking about this the other day, that it's got to be hard emotionally for the team and for the fans probably. They lose game seven, you get all the way back to the final again, and you lose game five at home, which I think cost them the series, and then they lose game six. So I can't imagine the roller coaster of emotion that each and every player has gone through over the past two seasons. And I was talking to a general manager the other day, and we were talking about his team. And I said, you know, it's hard for your guys to play in October. I know, because I was there, because every team wants to beat you because they're lining up to how good they are against the champions. Right. Mm-hmm. So October, November is tougher for the team who won the Stanley Cup than it is for other teams. Now, maybe for the exception of Montreal and Toronto, because everybody wants to go in there and play their best hockey, right, every night. So they have to be on their toes maybe a little bit more than other teams. So, you know, it's early in the season. He wants to win. I think he proved that by taking the contract that he took, that he wants to get other players around him, and he wants to build a good team here for a long time for the city of Edmonton. And he's a nice young man. So I hope that he have a great year. I picked them to go back to the finals. So, you know, 82 games is a long way to go. And the difference too, in, you know, everybody asks me all the time, what's the difference between hockey today? And one of the differences is home ice advantage. We used to play so hard to get home ice advantage because our fans were so incredible, as you can see in the playoffs. But more importantly, we had the best ice. We were comfortable there, and we stayed in our own houses. And in those days, you had the Boston Garden, Toronto Maple Leaf Gardens, Buffalo Auditorium. They were smaller rinks, and their teams were built around those ice surfaces. Now, every rink is the same, and the league took over the ice, and so the ice in L.A. is good, Anaheim it's good, Dallas it's good. And so home ice isn't as big a factor. I remember asking John Cooper a couple of years ago, they were playing Florida, I think it was the last game of the year, and the winner was going to get home ice advantage. And he didn't play his number one goalie. And I remember saying to him, why wouldn't you play your top guy to get home ice advantage? He goes, we don't worry about home ice anymore. As a matter of fact, sometimes it's better to start on the road. So that's a big difference in the game.
But were you as surprised as the rest of us when Connor took the 2 years and didn't take a raise?
No, not at all, because he wants to win. And I knew... You know, of course, because I'm friends with Daryl and Paul Coffey and my brother's assistant GM there. I knew from the inside they weren't fighting over money. And so I knew that I wasn't sure what he was going to take because I wasn't privy to that. But I knew they were going to get something done. And listen, he's given them an opportunity now to go out and sign some other guys or get other guys. And Stan Bowman's a very good general manager. He's won three championships in Chicago and he's been to the final with the Oilers. They're going to be fine. And, you know, Connor's just proof is in the pudding. He wants to win. And listen, he's going to make his money. He's going to get a lot more money in the next deal. But right now he wants to concentrate on winning a cup for the city of Edmonton. And good for him. He deserves a lot of credit for that.
I like the fact that everybody should be aware that they're on the clock, right?
Yeah. I think everybody is. Right. I think he sent his message loud and clear.
and that's fair. It gives them a bit of runway, but also lets them know.
Yeah, and good for him. Listen, he still gets paid a lot of money. And is he getting what he deserves? No, probably not, because he's one of the guys that sells tickets in every stadium that he goes to. People come out of their chairs. I mean, I watched the game, Bobby Orr and I watched him play a game in Florida one year, and we were both just looking at each other in marvel how good he was and how fast he was. And he was playing at a different level than other guys. And, you know, we've seen that in Bobby Orr, we've seen that in Mario. And he's definitely that guy that got to another level that I don't think anybody else is at. Now, McKinnon's close, and McKinnon's a great player. And I think that Austin and I think Leon, these guys are special elite athletes, but I don't think there's any question. I said, if you had 32 GMs, I think the one thing they would all agree on is if they could pick one guy. Now, we'll leave Toronto out of it in Colorado, because I don't want to put them on the spot. So you got 30 teams. They would all take Connor McDavid. And the other guy in the league, that if you had 30 GMs and you said you could pick one defenseman, I'd be shocked if all 30 didn't take Cale Makar.
Right.
So those are the two guys that make a difference each and every night.
So actually, I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, and that was phoning Eddie Belfour. Maybe we should be phoning Eddie to be the third goalie this year too, because do you have a, because you are a historian of the game. You watch, I know, yeah. You went to Europe, but you watch as much hockey as some of us. Are you concerned about Canadian goaltending?
No, not at all. And you know why? Because Canadians, as soon as they put the jersey on, go to another level. It has been that way since 1972. Now, I still watch periodically the Summit Series. I have tapes of all eight games, and I'll plug it in. And I always say, that's where Bobby Clark's coming out party was. He played incredible in that series. Paul Henderson, my goodness, who would have picked Paul Henderson to be the biggest hero? And while we're on the Paul Henderson thing, he should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. You know, people say, well, what he did in the NHL, and yeah, but Tretiak didn't play a game in the NHL, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Why is Paul Henderson not in the Hall of Fame? It makes no sense to me. So we always have these guys that rise to the occasion, right? And so whoever they decide on the goaltender, he'll play well. The defense on Team Canada is so strong and solid. Now, statistically, do the Americans have 3-4 top goalies? Yeah. But our guys are fine. The Canadian guys will rise to another level. I'm not worried about our goaltending at all, to be honest with you.
John, I got a couple of fun ones to finish off with.
So I do have to ask you, Wayne, and we talked a little bit about Four Nations, but you've received a lot of criticism about not defending the country, about the 51st state stuff that Donald Trump said. do you understand the criticism?
Oh, sure, because Canadians are proud. But here's the two factors. You know, I don't know how many people moved to the U.S., whether it's business, entertainment, hockey. And I don't know the exact number, but I would tell you that over 90% of them become American citizens. I never became an American citizen. I'm Canadian. I can't vote in the U.S. because I live in the U.S. and I'm Canadian. I can't vote in Canada because I don't live in Canada. I'm not into politics. And so I can't stop the prime minister for saying something. I can't stop the president for saying something. I just kind of like, well, I'm just a hockey player. Simple as that.
You're a voice that people want to hear from. You do understand. you do understand that. You do.
Yeah, sure. But as I said to the prime minister, you know, he wouldn't tell me how to play hockey. I'm not going to tell him what to do in politics. Simple as that.
By the way, is it true that Justin called you?
Yes,
saying he supported you.
It was a wonderful phone call that he reached out, and he gave me a great line. He said, "I'm giving you a hug call." I said, "Okay, I needed it right now." So anyway, I understand. Canadians are proud. Simple as that.
But it kind of hurt told him me.
I told him, "We'll make the United States the 12th province." So
I don't mind that.
Just tell Donald that, okay, Wayne? Just tell Donald that.
Did it hurt a little bit, though, Wayne?
Oh, you know, people are going to say and believe what they want, right? bottom line is, I know in my heart I'm Canadian, stayed Canadian, Canadian citizen for life, and simple as that.
How often do you talk to Rick? Go ahead, Rick, finish that. Yeah.
No, finish your thought, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say I had a lot of support too. So, you know, good, you got to take sometimes the good with the bad.
Well, you know, I'm just one of those guys. You and I have known each other for a long time, and it hurt me too. So it was one of those ones where
it probably would hurt my dad more. So I'm glad that he didn't have to see it.
Yeah.
How often do you talk to Rocket?
I would say 5 to 6 days a week. Usually the funny thing is, you know, I knew from day one, he's got a Flyer tattoo on his rear end. He's always been, there's Bobby Clark and then there's Rick Tocchet, right? Those are the two guys that live and die the Flyers. And he was so excited when he got the opportunity to coach in Vancouver, and he loved everything about Vancouver, the ownership, the general manager, the president Rutherford. He felt so disappointed that he had to leave there. But in his heart of hearts, he knew he wanted to be a Flyer and he wanted to be in Philly. And so he ended up in Philadelphia, and he's with a good group, Danny Briere, Keith Jones, the best hockey player ever come out of Brantford. So, you know, he's loving it.
stop reading Keith's press releases, okay?
I got to tell you a funny story. The All-Star game in St. Louis, I was going to the airport because I was flying to the outdoor game in Toronto. And I said to the driver as we were driving, he goes, "This is my hockey day." He said, "I'm picking up Keith Jones." I go, "Oh, my God." So we get close to the airport. I said, "When Keith Jones gets in the car, say to him, what did you ever do to Wayne Gretzky? Because he said, you're the worst person he's ever met in the National Hockey League." And the guy, he had Jonesy going. And before the guy could get it all out, the driver was laughing. And Jonesy called me and said, "You're a complete moron." So, yeah, I talked to Rick a lot. And he loves it there. He loves their team. And, you know, they got a lot of young players and they got some great young kids in their system. So good for him. Good. It's good to have the Flyers doing well. I was close friends with Ed Schneider, and he lived and died that franchise. So he'd be so proud that Rick is there now. So I'm happy for Rick.
And finish this way. Mm-hmm. I see boys on the bus all the time streaming on NHL Network, and I'll catch snippets of it. Do you ever go back and watch it? And what were those days like?
You know, unfortunately, Mike Boland just passed away, I think a week ago, right?
Wow. Mike was a good man. That.
And what was amazing about it, it had never been done before, right? And we were a flashy group, kind of people thought we were arrogant, but we weren't really. We were just confident. I like to believe we were all good people. We did a lot of stuff in local Edmonton for charities, and each and every guy helped each other and the charity that they chose to pick. And so it was a great group of guys, but it was a flamboyant group too. So Sather came in one day and he said, "We're going to do this behind the scenes video on the Edmonton Oilers. And they're going to be everywhere, in the locker room, before games, practices, on the bus, airplanes." And honest to God, we all just sat there and said, "Great." Not one guy said, "No, we don't want to do this." And so they were with us the entire year. And that was the year we lost game 7 to Calgary. And I remember we went into a meeting in June, Messier, myself, and Kevin Lowe, and Sather said, "Listen, they want to throw a little bit more money into this and do another year. Do you think we're going to win the Stanley Cup?" And of course, three of us looked at each other and said, "Of course we're going to win next year." And so they followed us for a second whole year. But they were everywhere. They were on the ice. Like, Mike would skate around with his camera. And he said to him, I said, "Did you play pro hockey?" He said, "Yeah, I played a little bit in the NHL. I played in Europe." And I said, "Oh," because he was a good skater. And he carried that, in those days, it was a huge camera, right? Mm-hmm. And he'd follow us all around the ice and practice. He'd be on the buses. They became part of our culture. And so when the documentary got done, we thankfully won game 7 against Philly, or that whole thing might have been tanked. I don't know what they would have done. So we win game 7, and they've got now a story because they got 1 year of losing, and then how we rebuild that in the offseason and how you come back the whole next year. And so it worked out great. Yeah, do I watch it? Yeah, sometimes I throw it on. Usually it's on the NHL Network, and if I'm sitting there and
that's where I see it.
I'll put it on, and yeah, I watch it. it's great memories, you know. It was wonderful memories. It was special.
What do the kids think?
They don't watch it.
By the way, wait, I know you're a hockey nerd like the rest of us. Mike Boland was in the starting lineup for the Ottawa Nationals on the first night of the WHA.
Yeah,
he was on the ice for the opening faceoff. And the other thing was that the other thing was you talked about the image of your team. It didn't reflect your players. You know as well as anybody, it reflected Slats.
Hey, I got to tell you something funnier. I watched that game. Wayne Carlton took the first faceoff for the Ottawa Nationals. I watched that game, and I remember thinking, gosh, this looks like junior hockey because there's nobody really in the arena. They were playing in the where the 67s play.
Right. That's right.
And I remember in those days you got up and turned the channel, right? So my dad said, what are you doing? I said, I want to put the NHL game on. I don't want to watch this. My dad goes, no, put that game on. You need a second league because if you're ever going to make pro hockey, it's good to have two leagues. I end up in the WHA.
Dad's know best, right?
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Definitely.
Thanks, Wayne. I really appreciate it. This has been a long time coming. Thanks for doing it. And enjoy your time on TNT.
Thank you guys very much. Have a great day. Bye, guys.
With the NHL app, you can listen to every NHL game right from your phone. And with home and away broadcast feeds, you choose your way to listen.
And he scores!
Whether you're at work, at the gym, or stuck in traffic, the NHL app puts you right in the action all season long. Every team, every game, everywhere you go. Download the NHL app and never miss a moment.
Sorry for getting the boys in the bus. I know that was a little random to throw that in. I just see it all the time, and I'm amazed how well it stands up. Like, fashion obviously comes and goes, but at a time when the National Hockey League and rights holders are looking for new ways to entertain us and take us into the sport, that is the gold standard for multi-sports, multi-leagues.
And it was well ahead of its time. Bob McEwen, who spent a lot of time at the CBC and then a lot of time at NBC in the United States, and his brother Terry, were the producers of the event, of the show. Again, Wayne talked about the great Mike Boland, who was he was a cinematographer. He wasn't a film guy or a video cameraman. He was a cinematographer. Was a brilliantly passionate person about the game of hockey and about film. So they were the key guys. I will tell you one story, because I'm always impressed with Wayne when he does these things, because Wayne can converse about anything. And Wayne, as I like to say, Wayne can hit the curveball. He was a pretty good baseball player, but Wayne, in interview situations, can diffuse situations and hit a curveball. Everybody can judge how he managed the conversation about Four Nations or about Donald Trump. But I remember standing with him at Gordie Howe's funeral. And we were having a long conversation because I was one of the few guys that he actually recognized. So he pulled me off to the side and we spoke for about 25 minutes about what Gordy meant to him. And really what had to happen in the game of hockey was that he knew, Wayne knew then, that he had to assume some of the stuff and some of the aura that Gordy Howe projected for so many years. In fact, I have a picture of the conversation. Somebody took a picture of the conversation of Wayne and me inside the Joe, talking about how, and now he knew that he was going to have to become, and if these are my words, the elder statesman for the game of hockey, so that people could rely on him. And again, Wayne is so polished at times. I'm always amazed that he's able to manage it and get through it. And that's why this whole last year and a half, I think, have been really tough on a lot of people. And particularly, I think it's been hard on Wayne. I really do.
Yeah, I think it hurt more than he was admitting.
Yes. And oh, no, I think it did.
Because I just put myself in that position. If people were calling me out, it would
well,
bother
I was
me.
Mad. I mean, as I told him, it hurt me. I was mad at him for not defending us. I wanted him to defend us. Mm-hmm. I really did. I wanted him to say, and you know, even the best of friends have arguments. I wanted him to say publicly, you know, we're never going to be the 51st state. I wanted him to say that because I think the country wanted him to say that. He didn't say that today, but he came close when, you know, he cracked the joke about the 12th province. So
I'd always heard that he wasn't asked to shoot in Nagano.
Right. Yeah.
But I'd never heard it from him.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, again, there was another event that, you know, we were all part of. And, you know, the famous shot after Dominic Hasek has stoned Canada of Wayne sitting by himself on the bench, which was a beautiful shot that our director, Jacques Primo, had. It was just an amazing shot, and you stuck with it, because Wayne knew at that point he was never going to get another chance to play at the Olympics because he knew he was going to retire the next year.
I like those Team Canada jerseys.
They were good.
Sweaters from 98. I like those ones.
I have one of them.
Yeah. Those are some of my favorites. Thanks for setting that up. Lots of cool stories, discussion with Wayne Gretzky, you don't usually get.
And editorially, you know, that people can make their own opinions about what Wayne said and how he said it. But Wayne has done much more for this country than most people realize. And I think it was important for him and give him a chance, a vehicle to say exactly what was going through his mind.
Wayne Gretzky on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Share it. Let people know. Love to get your thoughts on this conversation with number 99. We'll talk to you again next time on 100% Hockey.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.